people assume that a creative action like naming is sort of like you're looking for the needle in the haystack is kind of the metaphor that people are thinking. It's like, there are a lot of words out there. I'm looking for the right one. And that's really the wrong way to go about it. I think it gets back to a lot of how our education system works. And a lot of our education is oriented towards this convergent thinking where you're tested on, can you kind of narrow down on the right answer for these sorts of questions. It does us a little bit of a disservice when we're faced with a task like this, which is really a divergent thinking task. Because in order to have a good idea, you need to have lots of ideas.
Tap into the minds of change makers creating real impact on people and our planet. It's time to live your purpose. I'm your host, Dale Wilkinson, and this is Goodmakers. Hey, what is up? Welcome to episode 51. We are back. I took a little break after hitting 50 episodes, but we're back on with our regular programming. We have a whole bunch of interviews with social entrepreneurs coming up. So if you haven't yet, hit subscribe so you can get notified when the weekly episodes drop. And if you're looking for meaningful work, then head to goodgigs.app where you can find the latest full-time, freelance, and remote jobs with mission-driven companies working on causes that you care about. An agency that helps these social enterprises with their branding and storytelling is Bullhorn Creative. On this episode, we speak with Bullhorn's founder, Brad Flowers, who is also the author of The Naming Book, a step-by-step guide to help you create brand and product names. If you've ever tried to name your own business, you know how time-consuming and stressful it can be. Brad walks us through the key steps from the book that will help you come up with a name in a faster, more efficient manner, including setting goals for your name, how to create your own word, and how to narrow down the list of ideas to get the name that will work. Let's jump into my chat with the author of The Naming Book, Brad Flowers.
Welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Great, man. Thanks. I'm excited to be here. Talk about naming and other things, hopefully.
I told you before we started recording, I'm going to geek out about this episode because it's actually one of my favorite topics to do personally, like coming up with names for brands. I would pitch TV shows. So coming up with names for TV shows, which was really kind of different. Like I mentioned, I had no real process and structure like you have laid out in this book that you've authored, The Naming Book, which is a five-step process to creating brand and product names that help sell.
Right.
But first, you're also the founder of a branding agency called Bullhorn, which is focusing on creating impact brands. And you're also a B Corp. So I want to learn a little more about your background, how you actually got into this space and why the focus on impact companies and mission-driven companies.
Sure. Well, I don't think there's anyone who does naming that was like, you know, sitting around when they were a kid thinking, you know, I should go into naming. That's a good career trajectory. I don't think that's a thing. So yeah, I, when I was younger, I liked to read novels. And I thought the only thing that someone could do who liked to read novels was teach other people about novels. And so I graduated from college. I was applying to PhD programs. And while I was doing that, I took a job at a bicycle shop. And while I was at the bicycle shop, I found out two pretty important lessons. One was that I didn't at all like to teach, which was a tough lesson to figure out for someone who didn't really have a backup plan. But the second one was I learned that I was interested in business, which was a pretty big surprise. That wasn't really, you know, wasn't one of the options. It was kind of like growing up, it was sort of you could be a doctor or a lawyer or be kind of a middle manager somewhere. Those were kind of like your career paths. So I decided to start a business with a friend. We started a marketing agency initially. And then over the past 12 years, this was the fall of 2008. And over the past 12 years, we've each year, each project, we kind of think about that intersection of what are we good at? What can we make money doing? And what makes a positive impact on the world? And we've kind of honed in on this impact branding offering. It's something where I can bring my language and naming skills to bear with my partner's design skills. And I think it's something that's something that makes us unique and gives us some differentiation. We became a B Corp 3 years ago. We actually just recertified.
So do you have to recertify every 3 years?
Every 3 years, yeah.
And then you have to do the same kind of process again, or they expect you to be improving on particular points?
Yeah, there are five categories, which I'm not going to try to name because I can never remember them. But they revolve around like the kind of holistic picture of your business, kind of what's your environmental footprint? How are you treating your coworkers? How do you treat clients, your neighbors? The series of questions that help. Well, if you're recertifying, you can kind of see the areas where you can improve. If you're starting from scratch, it's actually, I'd recommend any company out there who's starting. I just recommend starting the assessment because the assessment's free. And as a small business owner starting off, like the big thing is you have basically no money and no time, and you can't really decide what to prioritize. You know, you want to improve, you want to do better, but you don't know what to do. It's like, should I try to save electricity, or should I, you know, get a bike and ride to work, or, you know, it's hard to weigh like what makes the biggest impact. And so the assessment gives you a clear roadmap.
From starting the agency in 2008, mm-hmm. was that an initial idea to work with mission-driven brands, or was it an evolution of that time period?
Well, again, like ours isn't probably something that I wouldn't recommend doing it like we did it. We had no experience and no clients when we started. All we had was like irrational confidence.
That's all you need sometimes.
Which is all we needed, it turns out, to get going. And we were kind of nice, I think. That was the other thing. We started off working mostly with nonprofits, and we worked with a lot of local nonprofits and have kind of grown since then. So I think that starting point gave us the sense that as we transitioned to working with all different sorts of organizations, we were always pretty sensitive because we kind of had this innate understanding that as a service provider, like what you do is kind of like ethically neutral. It's not like if you're making something, it's clear. It's like, are you doing this in a positive sort of way or not? Where this is, it's not so clear. So it's really like, it puts the burden on you to, you know, be critical about who you're working for, because we're pretty convinced that our work gives organizations an advantage in their marketplace. And so you have to be thoughtful about who you work with. And so that's been the like kind of like the rationale all along of how we got here and talking about impact brands, because, you know, we don't work just exclusively with B Corps, or that's another, like that whole length, it's kind of a like language morass around all of that. But the sense is that we want to work with companies who can recognize that when you're in business, there are positive impacts. You create jobs, you make things, you create taxes, et cetera. But there are also negative impacts of the business. You have an environmental footprint, et cetera. So we want people who acknowledge that there are negative impacts and are working to moderate those, and also recognize that there are a lot of really great things. You know, we think business can be brought to bear to solve some of the biggest problems we're facing as a country and as the world right now. And so, you know, we want to maximize those positives too. We don't want to downplay how important we think some of the work is.
You mentioned this in your book when you were first coming up with a name for one of your nonprofit clients, an incubator.
Yeah.
Was it then, or when did you realize that you had this interest, you had this skill that you liked coming up with names for products and brands?
Yeah. Looking back, it's so hard to tell, because it's like looking back, I can see that I've always liked it. You know, I've named everything. You know, I've named bicycles. My partners have nicknames for everybody and everything. It's like we named buildings. So it's like, I think it's one of those things that were kind of intuitive for us that, again, like I just legitimately didn't know that that was a job that you could get. I had no idea that people paid people to come up with names. And so we started off doing marketing work. There were initially two partners. He was putting on music events and I was doing bicycling events. So we started off kind of in that event marketing space and then eventually grew outside of that. But we named the events that we started, and, you know, they were just our events. So anyway, I think we've done it naturally. But yeah, that first time, the example that you were talking about, it was the first time where the light went off. I was like, oh man, this was like super stressful and super hard, but it was awesome. You know, it felt really good to come up with something that felt differentiated and unique and cool.
Now, before we actually get into the book and these five steps, what is the benefit to having or spending the time to ensure that you've actually got a really solid name for your business or brand?
I think I'll start off with two, and then if I think of another reason, I'll expand. But I think there are at least two reasons. One is, you know, this competition, it's just like if your name can buy you 10, 15 seconds of someone's attention, like that's mm-hmm. pretty good. That's an awful lot. Everything is so crowded. Everything is branded. You look around, you're probably surrounded by 20 or 30 brands, just what you're looking at. And so if it's that attention factor, if a name can like pique someone's attention, get their interest. And then the second thing is then once they have your attention, is it a foundation for some sort of story that you can tell or differentiated viewpoint? You know, what makes you unique among all the offerings? And there's a story in the book about shopping for lunch for my kids. I was trying to find something to send them to school. And in the freezer aisle of the supermarket, and you know, you can see there's like 100 freezer doors probably. And I stopped, I was like, you know, burritos, they probably eat burritos. And looking at frozen burritos, I happened to notice this one name. It stood out. The name is E-V-O-L is how the name's spelled. When I looked at it, the E in the logo is rendered backwards. And so it makes you think you're supposed to read it backwards. So then I was like, oh, is it love? And then I was like, maybe, but if you say it, it's just evil. So is it evil? And then I was like, it can't be evil. It must right. be evil. And then I was like, oh, maybe it's like evolve. Like this is an evolved choice or something. Right. Anyway, that's one of those names. It's like, you know, it feels a little too precious, but it worked. You know, it got my attention out of like thousands of choices. And yeah. then after the name caught my attention, you know, the packaging was nice. The messaging on it talked about how easy it is that they're made with organic products, all of these other messages that resonated with me. And so the name just like bought the 10 seconds and I have like a basket full of burritos.
Yeah. So was it kind of a play on evolve because it is?
I have no idea.
Let's just go with that then.
Yeah. I don't know.
It did the job. You bought the burritos.
Yeah.
What are some of the common mistakes that business owners or marketers make when they're coming up with names? And have you seen anything in particular when it comes to mission-driven entrepreneurs and business owners?
The way I set the book up, it's five steps, but really the middle three are focusing on the same thing, which is kind of idea generation. And so really, I think there are three things that are hard about naming. One is generating the criteria by which you're going to determine if it's good or not. Two is generating a lot of ideas. Mm-hmm. And then three is picking the best name. And so I think there are common pitfalls within each of those three steps. And so with criteria to start off with, the first big mistake that most people make starting off is they never take the time to establish criteria. They think mm-hmm. they'll just, it's sort of like the pornography ruling. It's like, I'll know it when I see it. It's like is it porn or is it art? And I don't know if that's a reference anyone gets. It seems a little from left field. There was a senator who said that, I don't know, 20 years ago or something.
Got it.
So he said he would know it when he saw it. So anyway, so like, I think most people think, oh, I'll just kind of resonate, or there'll be like the light bulb will click and then I'll know it's the name. And so they don't take the time to set the criteria. So it's like, the reality is you're not, you know, depending on what you're naming, this varies quite a bit. But if you're naming a business, you know, the name needs to do some pretty practical things. There's the competition, which is something you probably should think quite a bit about. What's the naming like in your space? There is URL. What, you know, does it matter if it has a short URL? That's just kind of like a nuts and bolts choice. Are the social media handles available? Those kind of things that like aren't that exciting to think about when you're like having this like pie in the sky kind of idea session. But when it comes down to the nuts and bolts of running the business, if you can kind of work yourself into the corner, if you don't think about those up front.
This is step one in your book. So the overview of that is the selecting the criteria. So really kind of jotting down everything that you need this name to be. And as you were kind of getting at, you've got to actually do the work to be able to come up with some good options.
Yeah, you have to do the work. Because if you don't, and the main reason why, if you don't, when it comes to making a decision, you're not going to have anything to any, you're not going to have any strategic viewpoint to lean back on to make a good decision. It's just going to be like, well, I like this. And, you know, whether right. you like it or not really may not matter that much, which is hard right. for most entrepreneurs to hear. But it's the truth. You know, it has to do a lot of other things apart from you liking it. You know, I do think certainly there are important personal things, like when you start to think about what are your values, how are your values articulated in tones, and those sort of things are super important. And, you know, I talk about a couple of different examples you can think of. I mean, you can think of examples probably from any field, but if you think of like watches, a word like Swatch is pretty different than a word like Mont Blanc, which makes pens, but they make watches too. It's like, those are pretty, or Rolex, you know, those are all very different names that tonally feel quite a bit different, even though it's basically, you know, it keeps time on your wrist, same thing. But the names signify different things. You know, one might, you know, Mont Blanc is literally this like inaccessible thing that's hard to get to. And so it's like, yeah. it's signaling distance between you and the product, which is a way of saying like, you probably can't afford this. Whereas something like Swatch feels quick, it's memorable, it's catchy, it feels kind of like, you know, they could have like a candy line associated with it or something, you know,
right.
so that the tone feels different. So it's like, what kind of tone are you trying to convey? And these also really can affect the next step in when you get into generating ideas, because some, you may not want to go down certain avenues depending on what you are, what your criteria is.
Gotcha. And I should mention that this book, I'm going to have a link in the show notes for people to get, because it's a really awesome process. You've laid out these five steps, and then you have all these examples under each step, specifically with the selecting the criteria. So for example, when I was coming up with the name for Good Gigs, I had an idea of how many syllables I wanted. I wanted to be very literal in terms of, you know what it is when you hear it. So this right. is really kind of step one, right? Like selecting that criteria, what you like as potentially the business owner, the founder, but also like you mentioned, maybe it doesn't matter what you like, more so what your customers are caring about.
That's right. And so for some businesses and some organizations, that a literal name makes a lot of sense. And for some businesses, something more metaphorical makes more sense. So you mm-hmm. think of a company like Apple, like the word Apple doesn't really tell you anything about what they're selling. But right. if you think about it for a while, you might think about, okay, I've heard the story of Isaac Newton and the apple falling on him. So maybe it's something about like inspiration, or I've heard the story of Adam and Eve and then like the apple that's like the fruit of knowledge. So those sort of metaphors add richness to something that otherwise might not mean much. And so it's really kind of depends on what the goal and what you're trying to do. Mm. And hopefully those are strategic decisions. And the whole point of going through the process of doing the criteria is that you make each of those decisions purposefully, and that you don't just make assumptions. And I talk a little bit about relying on tradition, or also like cliches in your industry probably would be another way of thinking about tradition. The whole point is, these should be purposeful, conscious decisions, and not just, you know, based on your assumptions of what it should be.
Yeah, because then that obviously makes the whole process a lot easier as you go into step two, when yep. you start brainstorming and actually yep. coming up with these names. You've got these points that you want to tick off.
So when you, yeah, getting into step two and really three and four, there are some common pitfalls here too that people often make. So one is, people assume that a creative action like naming is sort of like you're looking for the needle in the haystack, is kind of the metaphor that people are thinking. It's like, there are a lot of words out there, I'm looking for the right one. And that's really the wrong way to go about it. I think it gets back to a lot of how our education system works. And a lot of our education is oriented towards this convergent thinking, where you're tested on, can you kind of narrow down on the right answer for these sorts of questions? And so really our whole education is oriented around convergent thinking. It does us a little bit of a disservice when we're faced with a task like this, which is really a divergent thinking task. Because in order to have a good idea, you need to have lots of ideas. And there's another anecdote from the book, which is, I've heard it now in different settings. So I think that it's probably an apocryphal story, but so the story is there's this pottery class and the teacher splits the class into two groups. One group is tasked with making as many pieces as possible, and they're going to be graded on how much their work weighs at the end. The other half is graded on, you just have to make one piece and it has to be great. And so the story comes out that the students who made the most work also made all the best pieces. And so I think people who work in creative fields probably get it naturally, but most people who are entrepreneurs who really just want to name one thing and then move on to all the rest, you probably don't necessarily get that. That if you see a logo, a designer didn't sit around thinking and then draw one logo. You know, they drew hundreds. They drew hundreds of logos. And yep. then finally kind of realized which one worked the best, which scaled the best, which worked the best as a, you know, a Twitter icon. It's, you know, through the whole spectrum. So if you're in the creative field, you probably get that a little better. But, you know, I was really thinking about the entrepreneurs as I was writing this, because it strikes me that it's a particularly daunting task to do this just once. It's hard, and there really aren't any tools. When I started to write this book, there weren't any books that really laid out a methodology for how to do it in a step-by-step process. Hopefully this can help some folks, and especially, like you mentioned, people who are thinking about mission-driven businesses starting off, because it's certainly the group that I'm most passionate about.
Yeah, for sure. So is this process good to be, if you're a solo founder, if you're an individual going through this process? It also works if you're potentially working with a team.
Yes. And so that's actually leads in the other common pitfall or mistake that I see people make is around brainstorming. It's more true if you're, I guess it's more true probably if you're working in a group where you, it's like, okay, you know, at 3 o'clock, we're going to have a brainstorming session. Everyone shows up, you know, there's a blank whiteboard. It's like, okay, start. Yeah. And that's just not a good way to brainstorm. And yeah. So tip number one is if you're brainstorming, you should do as a group, you should do all the brainstorming individually and then come together to compare the merit of various ideas. And so when you come together, you're looking at what's working and then how can you build on everyone else's ideas? So it's like, okay, here's the start of an idea. How can we take it five more steps?
Yeah.
So that's the first step in brainstorming. The second one is really applies to everyone, which is that it's that the challenge of starting off with a blank page. And if you don't do it a lot, like sometimes now I'll start off with a blank page just to do something different, but I've done it a lot. And so if you haven't done it a lot, really it helps to have prompts to get going on the idea generation. Also, if you don't, a lot of the words end up sounding pretty similar. And so maybe for whatever reason, because of whatever you're doing, all of them are nouns or all of them are verbs or adverbs, or you tend to kind of hone in on specific things. And so I have a couple of tips in the book of how to create starting points for the brainstorming that helps you, again, that helps encourage divergence. People say to us a lot in some of our exploratory meetings, it's like, wow, that felt like a counseling session or something. And it's like, none of us are counselors or therapists, but if I were to name Bullhorn, I would maybe start one of my categories as therapist. And so I'm going to start a brainstorming list there, because it creates a different jumping off point. So you're going to get a totally different set of words than you otherwise would, and also other reference points.
That works, right? Like if you're having a compound name, like you've got two words together and there could be, so like good gigs, like I had this spreadsheet and I had good, and then I just changed out the name. I had like this long list, and it works. It helps to also see it visually and be able to have this list and see what works and what doesn't.
Yep.
At what point do you then bring in outside feedback and outside perspective and to start experimenting with customers, seeing what they like, friends and family? Is this around step five, or would that be earlier?
That's a good question. I think it's probably helpful to test your assumptions in criteria after step one and make sure you're thinking about it in the right sort of ways. So you probably don't need an intensive focus group or something, but it's probably good to run it by a couple people. If you're doing it by yourself, you can certainly you get a little myopic. It just, you get too close to it. And so I'd say you get close enough to it to where you don't realize the assumptions that you're making. And so showing people some of your criteria, I think, would help. The brainstorming phase should be pretty messy, and it should be pretty hard for anyone to make heads or tails of it. So if when you're going through that phase, that's kind of, you're doing it on your own as a team, you're generating lots of ideas. And then from there, you're going to go to some research and you're going to use some research tools to find lots of words that you probably didn't know. In the book, I also talk a little bit about how to start to compile some names. So this is another way to create divergence. So up to now, divergence has been in brainstorming. So you're generating lots of different types of words. But when you start to think of names, there are a lot of different types of names too. And so when you're filling out the spreadsheet, I just start off with across the top, I create the headings, I create real words, foreign words, made up words, affixed words, which affixed is like Spotify, Shopify, compound mm-hmm. words like Facebook, Good Gigs, words like, Pinterest. I often call those smushed, but that's not actually what I call it in the book. I actually can't remember.
Smushed.
Smushed words, you know, where you take pen and interest and kind of smush it together to create a new word.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, you know, like people and places sometimes are good, you know, that kind of like thinking about what's the historical context. Again, it gets back to kind of what you're doing and that can help you refine there. So all of the work you've done, all your brainstorm lists, then you're going to take some of those category headers and use those as jumping off points for research. So
yep.
You might think like, okay, one of my metaphors is design build. And so I'm going to look up design build techniques or, you know, new technologies in construction, which like for a company like Bullhorn, you would never normally think for a branding company to have a construction metaphor, but it's like we're building stuff. And so it kind of works metaphorically. Right. So it's like, that's where you can come up with, especially if part of your criteria is to come up with something that has not a ton of competition. You're going to need either something that's probably made up based in a foreign language or is pretty obscure in origin. And so those digging down into the research of those obscure words can be, that's like super rich territory for coming up with a real word that's pretty easily pronounceable, that has a really good backstory. You know, you can start to still tell some pretty compelling stories about why we picked this sort of word and how that adds richness to what we're doing.
Throughout that process, do you have some tools that help with that? I'm assuming the thesaurus will come in handy. I sometimes go to rhymingzone.com, I think it is, and then try and rhyme it with something else. Is there anything else that folks should be thinking about?
Yeah, I think that like a first place, just because it's so richly hyperlinked, is Wikipedia. You know, it's not a great like mm-hmm. resource in general, but for quickly creating these interconnected webs, you can go pretty deep. So like you pick a term like design build, and then you pick on a specific person, and then it's like a technique. And next thing you know, you're five steps away and you're somewhere totally different than where you started. So I wouldn't use a source like that as a definitive research source, but for quickly researching terms. Also, if you just search like shipbuilding terminology, or, you know, you'll come up with lists of words like navigation terms or a glossary, anything you're looking for, there's going to be a list of jargon. And so it's that insider jargon where you can pull an out of context word and find something that's really cool.
You mentioned it earlier with URL, mm-hmm. social media handles. Do you start looking at that when you maybe have like a short list of names you do kind of yep. look at and then go to see if they're available? Because that could be the nail in the coffin for some people, right? Yep. If it's gone.
Yeah. So what we do at Bullhorn, we follow this exact process. So we go through, we've already worked with the client to establish the criteria. Each of the people who are working on the name have generated their brainstorming lists. They've done the research. We fill out individual spreadsheets because we don't want to influence each other and create any sort of convergence on accident. And so we're trying to keep things as siloed as possible. So we're filling out our individual spreadsheets. We found cool words. We know, okay, so now I need to work on compounds. And so I'm going to go back and I'm going to see, okay, which words are fitting together well, which aren't working. How can I take two words that are seemingly totally dissimilar and create something new that's like, oh, this seems like a totally new thing. So then we get to our stopping point, we'll combine the lists, and we hope to have around 200 to 250-ish ideas. Then it kind of gets into the nitty gritty of the hard decisions. And that's when you start doing some of this research that we talked about. So the first test is, again, we refer back to the criteria. So we're still pretty much working internal. We're not thinking much about the external world yet. We're still thinking, okay, what is, it's not like, what do we like? Sometimes it's, what do I like? I'm not going to lie, but most of the time it's what's working against this criteria. And so we'll cut that generally to fewer than 50 names at that point. And so we'll start to do a little bit of industry research, and that'll get us down to around 20. So by industry research, I mean, I'm going to search the term just generally to see general competition, to see, yep, like, is there something that's just like huge that I don't know about? Or is there something like super negative that I didn't know? Could be anything. So I'll search the term itself. Then I'll search the term with as many industry terms as possible. So it's like, if it were Bullhorn, I'd be like Bullhorn branding, Bullhorn marketing, Bullhorn advertising, whatever kind of like tangential services there are, to see if there's something that's going to be similar. And so we'll usually cut some names that way. And then also a couple of other tools people can use. You're going to have to eventually register the name with the Secretary of State wherever you are. Mm-hmm. And so looking at the Secretary of State website, all of those have word searches or business listing searches. So that's another good place. You know, it doesn't have to necessarily be totally unique. It's unlikely, if it's a real word, that it's totally unique. It happens sometimes, but not all the time. But, yeah, you know, if you're creating, you know, athletic shoe company and there's a wealth planner that has the same name, it probably doesn't matter that much. You know, it's not going to be confusing to the customer. The other place is United States Patent Trademark Office. I forget what it stands for. It's USPTO.gov. I get it wrong almost every time. So, and it's the same thing. You can tell what's been trademarked. And again, it's like, what you're looking for is, are there 7 trademarks or are there 7,500? That's kind of the scale. You want to get a sense. It's like, is there a ton out there or is there not a lot? And so those are the tools we help to get down to like 20-ish names. And at that point, then I would be starting to look externally to what other people thought about the names. And so what we do at Bullhorn is, usually I'll put together a presentation. I'll include the criteria up front, a little blurb about the client, what they're trying to do. And then I'll put the names over the top of a couple of different images, because people are very image sensitive. And so if you pick a different image for each word, some people might all love the same image and they won't realize that the image is influencing them more than the word. So I'll pick usually a couple of images, and I'll use the same 2 through the whole thing. And then I'll also pick a couple of different typefaces, because people are also really sensitive to how they look. So I'll pick one that looks, typically people think of it as more contemporary, which is called a sans serif, something like Helvetica. And then I'll pick something that people usually associate as something more traditional, like a serif typeface, which would be like Times New Roman, or those are the most obvious examples for most folks. And then I'll go through, and what I want is people's initial feedback. So they know the criteria, they know what the organization's trying to do. So I kind of just want to hear 1 to 10. Is it 1, like you hate it, it's the worst name? 10, is it, this is the best, this is really a great name for this? And then we add up everyone's responses. I present it to the whole team internally, and we do it internally mainly because we have a pretty broad spectrum of folks. So it's, you know, there are a handful of writers, but there are also designers who bring kind of a different cultural lens. They don't have the same sort of vocabulary or background with language. We have account people who, again, think totally differently, salespeople. And so usually that's a broad enough cross-section to get a sense of like, man, I love this name, but everyone else hates it. And like, it's like, do I believe in it enough to still pitch it? That's usually how I encourage people to do it, is if you're gonna show names to other people, always start off with some brief statement about what you're trying to do, then follow that up with the criteria. Because if someone sees a name on a piece of paper, they're almost every time, unless they name things professionally, they're almost exclusively going to say, I don't get it. That's a dumb name, because it's totally out of context. A business name is never by itself on a blank piece of paper. It's always in the context of a person who represents the organization, a building, a product, a piece of software, a physical good. So trying to fake context as much as possible. And that's partly why I put it in different typefaces and putting it with different images that will evoke emotion. You're trying to fake context to make it feel real And then people can tell, these feel real, but this feels more right.
Is there types of names that you don't like? So like your personal preference, would you like made up names like or that have really kind of more abstract for the company, like Uber or Apple, versus more literal names? Is there something that you prefer to, you're drawn to?
Yeah, I mean, personally, I don't particularly like made up words. And I don't typically like affixed names either, like Shopify, Spotify. The main thing I don't like about it is like Shopify and Spotify. If you look at the name trends for that IFY suffix, there were like 2008, there were like three. 2009, there were like seven. 2010, there were like 307. And so the trouble is like Napster or something is you can kind of get lumped into a certain era and it allows for lots of copycats. You can also think of like people come like early, like iPad or iPhone eras, and people were kind of using that to signify this is a tech product. It's the I whatever. So I don't typically love those sorts of names, but that's just my preference. I mean, they can, obviously there are a lot of made up names that work really well. And generally I tend to like, I sometimes like literal names if I feel like they're handled in kind of a poetic sort of way. Like I just like if it just like sounds particularly nice or I like it. But probably more often it's like if there's some sort of payoff where I don't know what it is and then I look into it and find and there's like some cool metaphor or some cool story. That's to me, that's when it's especially gratifying. And I think it works well with customers too, because it kind of creates this sense of like insider outsiders. There are people who kind of get it, people who don't really get it. And so, I don't know, again, that's just my preferences. And that wouldn't, depending on what I was naming, that wouldn't necessarily limit. When I named Bullhorn, I'd never named anything before. And so if I went about it today, it'd be pretty different. And I'm sure the name would be totally different.
So for anyone that's listening that needs to create a name for maybe their business or a product or an event, I'm going to have the link to Brad's book in the show notes. If there's a business owner out there that would like to work with Bullhorn, where's the best place that they could reach out to you?
We're Bullhorn Creative pretty much all over the internet. So bullhorncreative.com or social media is a good place to check us out.
Beautiful. Brad, thank you so much. Yeah. I appreciate you.
Thank you. It was great.
I hope that was helpful for you. If you're in the process of coming up with a name, make sure to grab Brad's book. The link to buy is in the show notes. And even if you're not coming up with a name, a lot of the principles Brad shares in the book applies to any creative process. And I love how Brad pointed out that to have a good idea, you need to have lots of ideas. You've got to do the work, and Brad's framework can help with that. If you haven't subscribed, do that now. I'd be so grateful to have you part of the community. Until next week, thanks for showing up and being you.